Poker Stories is an audio series that features casual interviews with some of the game's best players and personalities. Each episode highlights a well-known figure in the poker world and dives deep into their favorite tales, both on and off the felt.
Hello and welcome to Poker Stories, a podcast brought to you by Card Player, the Poker Authority, and hosted by me, Julio Rodriguez. This is episode number 43, and this week we are joined by Michael Mizrachi. If you've missed any of the news from this year's World Series of Poker, you might not know that Mizrachi recently won the $50,000 Poker Players Championship for just over $1.2 million. That was actually Mike's third overall 50K championship win. He first won it in 2010, and then did it again in 2012. Mike, who is now 37 years old, has four WSOP bracelets overall. His biggest score, however, was for his fifth place finish in the 2010 main event, where he earned $2.3 million. Mike is also a two-time World Poker Tour champion, having won the LA Poker Classic in 2005 and the Borgata Winter Poker Open in 2006, when he won the Card Player Player of the Year award. With $16.7 million in lifetime earnings, Mike currently sits number 26 on the all-time earnings list. Of course, it hasn't always been smooth sailing for Mike. There were the obvious swings that come with variance, and he had some tax issues that became public after some bad timing in the real estate market. But it seems like you can't keep the grinder down for too long before he's back in the winner's circle. Anyway, that's enough intro. Here's my conversation with Michael, the grinder, Mizrachi. I am here with the one and only Michael Mizrachi. How you doing?
What's going on, Julio?
Mizrachi. Mizrachi. Right? There you go. Get the emphasis in that one. It is the day off for you. You're still in the World Series of Poker main event, but you get a little nice day off before you get out there and try to make another final table.
Yeah, well, I mean, day one performance was pretty amazing. I got away with a lot of bluffs.
You know, I was reading your Twitter, and people were praising you, like, for not being the typical guy who gets on TV, freezes up, and plays that robot style, you know what I mean? And yeah. I saw you were saying no more robots on your Twitter.
Yeah, I said make poker great again.
Yeah. So what's your problem with robots?
Well, I've just, you know, actually I was always in favor of the action clock, the shot clocks. Mm-hmm. And as you see, I played two shot clock tournaments, was the tournament champions. I finished second and third, back-to-back years. Mm-hmm. That's the only time when I played with the shot clock. But I can't
stand the WPT tournament of champions.
Yeah, I just can't stand when people just take so long, 3 to 5 minutes a hand. I mean, I respect you want to trap the guy, Hollywood the guy, whatever you got to do. But, I mean, it's not fair to the rest of the table. I mean, if you think you're the best player on the table, why don't you want to get the hand over with and play twice as many hands as you can?
Yeah, if you're that good, you shouldn't be increasing your edge by getting as many hands in as possible.
Of course.
So do you think players play worse with the shot clock, and that's maybe a good advantage for you?
I think they do, because all these robots, they take so long, and they're used to taking this, you know, this different style where they think that you're intimidating somebody. You might, but you maybe get under their skin, but, you know, and it does get under my skin, but I hate it. I just know what they're doing. And if somebody wants to do that, I'll just do it right back to them. It'll take twice as long, but I just don't do it. I just don't do it because it's not fair to the table. I'm here to play poker, not to just sit there and wait 10 minutes a hand when you already know what you're going to do. And I guarantee you everybody knows the decision in 10 seconds. It shouldn't take more than 10 seconds to even act.
Yeah, I was reading some of the comments here. I was reading, they were pretty fun. They were like, this has been one of the greatest displays of anyone trying to accomplish anything in the history of mankind. That's what somebody said about your poker game. Wow. I mean, there's a little hyperbole in there, but, like, that just says something about your style.
It's just a style where no one's seen, you know, I showed the ways to get chips, you know, without playing without hands. Yeah. And it's just, you got to adjust to the table. You know, I had a perfect table for me where I can, you know, maneuver, make some quick adjustments. I knew how everybody played right away. Mm-hmm. And knew who I could steal from, knew I couldn't. And I wasn't in the best seat because I had powers on my left. But after a while, you know, they're like, all right, Mike's in Mike 4 bet me. I can't re-raise them, so I shut them down there. But anyways, day one was great. Day two, you know, I wanted to mix it up a little bit because I know everyone watched how I played and knew how I played, and they got so much information. But I really, every time I had hands, I never held, like, it was never good. Every time I had big pairs, and every time I had garbage, it worked.
Yeah, yeah, that stick with the garbage.
I'm trying to stick with the garbage, so I might as well just fold those big pairs.
Obviously, we're still, you know, day two of the main event, and by the time this comes out, you probably have already won the main event by then. But, you know, I want to talk about your playing style specifically, because I read an article with you where you talked about your strategy where you will designate portions of your stack to gamble with.
Yeah. Yeah, so sometimes, you know, I say to myself, you know, this portion I have to gamble with, this portion, you know, I have to play nitty, which people probably didn't see the nitty side of me because the first two days, but I can be really nitty.
Where's the nitty side of
the grinder? it was just a show to show that you can win, you can get so many chips without any hands, and I guarantee nobody would have had that stack with my cards I had in day one.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just that when I have, like, that big stack, I said, okay, this is what I could bluff off, maybe 25%, you know, to bluff off, 25% to flip. So if I get down to the last 50%, back to 50% I lost, and just wait, you know, knit it up and just, you know, just pick the right spots and not get too crazy, not, you know, not try to bluff off all my chips. But I do minimize my bluffs a lot. Just because you saw me bluffing a lot doesn't mean I do bluff a lot. So just be careful. I do have it sometimes.
Yeah, for any of his opponents who are listening to this podcast, he sometimes has it.
Sometimes I have it.
You know, just trying to get into your mindset. Because obviously for you, the way to really go deep in a field is to accumulate chips early so you can constantly apply pressure. You know, that's what you'd like to do.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I feel like, you know, in the main event, I know that if I apply a lot of pressure to a lot of players, there's one chance in a lifetime. And
yeah,
you know, it's
exactly.
Like they don't want to make they're just like, I don't want to make that one big mistake, and people are taught in their head, you know, or maybe they're, you know, they have friends and, oh, stay away from this professional player, stay away from the grinder, you know, so I can use that to my edge.
Do you feel on people who, like, want to take you on because of who you are? People are like, well, I'm going to show the grinder who's boss today.
I think on day two, like the second day two, A and B, I think that, like, you want to take advantage of players, so I'm going to come back at him. But I wasn't really getting played back a lot. You know, in the first few levels when I wasn't on TV, you know, I was kind of taking advantage. I got away with a lot of stuff, but I got unlucky too. I got it all in with jacks versus eights. No one saw that. Then I got the eight on the turn. But, you know, a few hands where I lost. I got two outer twice and a three outer when I was off the TV table.
Yeah, when no one could see it.
When no one could see it. So they didn't see my bad beats.
All right, well, we'll put this tournament aside for the moment. We'll go back to the beginning. January 5th, 1981, you come into the world, the very beginning. This is Hollywood or North Miami Beach? Or?
Yeah, Miami, Jackson Memorial.
I was born in Jackson Memorial.
Oh, see there?
Yeah, but 3 years later. That's crazy. It's crazy. That I'll talk to you about Hollywood Hills afterwards, but there's a good chance you went to school with my stepbrother. But yeah, South Florida boy, grew up in a gambling family.
Yeah, it was crazy.
I heard the story about the envelopes from Rob, but the fact that your mom and dad were gamblers too. I mean, you were pretty much born to do it.
Yeah, well, my mom was always like poker. My dad was, you know, more like, he wasn't a gambler. He's a hard worker, you know, had his own business, you know, women's clothing. He's got his clothing line. And he was more like, he liked slot machines and he liked roulette. He likes roulette a lot. Roulette's his game. You know, 8 and 17.
Does he cover the zeros?
8 and 17 is numbers. he likes roulette. My mom likes machines as well. She likes playing, but she plays a lot of online poker when she gets a chance.
That's where they learn poker.
And
in video poker?
Well, my mom always wants the credit, say she taught us, but.
But I have to say something.
Yeah.
Your mom would go to.
Well, we should introduce you first. You want to introduce your girlfriend?
Yes. Go ahead, Sarah Braca.
Hey, guys. So his mom would tell me stories upon stories, but she had these four little boys, and she would have ladies' poker nights, and she would have to take the boys, and they would sit behind her, and sometimes they would yell out her cards. Like, Mommy's got an ace.
Oh, wow.
And she's like, shh, no, don't say anything.
You're snitching on your mom at an early age there.
Yeah. And their mom plays a lot of online poker. Like, she definitely loves poker or gambling more than your dad.
Yeah,
it's definitely like a unique gambling family.
Did you guys have any choice to go into anything else? Because I read that you wanted to be a doctor or something.
Well, my mom, I don't know why I keep it, but my mom was starting to be an RN, and then I was, you know, I was always there for her, so I was helping her study, you know, I was learning myself, so I was like, you know, if, you know, I wasn't a poker player, maybe I'd choose to be a doctor, because I love to help people out and save lives. So I said, would that suit me? Yeah, but I just couldn't, you know, the poker was my life. I love gambling. I love taking people's baseball cards, comic books. And
you were doing it early.
I was doing it early. I started off
in a machine in the house.
We had slot machines out. We had a roulette table in the house. We had cards.
This was, I'm sure, Rob's doing.
Rob
was running like an illegal casino in your house.
Yes, he did. And I hit the jackpot I hit the jackpot one time.
You were allowed to play in the house?
In the house. I hit the jackpot. All the quarters came out of the machine. Rob pulled out the plug and then. and then he didn't pay me my full jackpot, so he still owes me quite a bit of money.
The house always wins.
Yeah, well,
especially if you leave don't get paid.
Especially if you don't get paid. Yeah, so those are, you know, we had good days. You know, a lot of friends come over. We always gamble for cards. You know, we always gamble for baseball cards, comic books. But it was more luck. It was like a draw poker game. There's no really betting.
Yeah, but everyone else your age was doing it with pogs. You know what I mean?
Well, we
totally.
We do something with a lot of value and what really hurts.
Yeah.
But I always tell him from like an outside perspective, like when I first met Michael and his family, like there was nothing like normal about it. It was very like that shock factor. Like, wow, like this is exciting and fun. Like you're never going to meet another family like them.
No. First family.
Never.
And they started doing well at a young age, online poker.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, so you were playing online at 15.
So that's what I'm away
starter,
from.
Statute
of limitations is up, so it's okay on that one.
But I started when I was first, I started going on those cruises when I was 15, 16 years old. And that's where I actually met Stacy Madison. She was like the manager of the cruise ship. She was like kind of the host, you know, running the games. Yeah. You know, checking, doing the list.
Yeah, because back in the day in Florida, you couldn't gamble in the state. You had to go on a boat and go a few miles offshore.
And then
she would sneak them on.
And then I snuck on the boat. I started playing 1-5, 7
card stud.
How
old were you when you first went on the boat?
I think 15, 16 years old. I worked for Bennigan's.
Did you pass for 18?
Well, I got away with a little bit,
Was it a lot
of old. I mean,
tipping involved to look the other way?
I mean, couldn't really afford tipping because I was working at Bennigan's.
There you go.
So, but I was just a busboy, busing tables, doing waiter. I was a dishwasher one day, a Q&A one day.
That's good.
I've done a little bit of everything.
On here.
Yeah, so it wasn't much of a paying job, but, you know, that's why I started off.
Talk about the envelopes. Didn't that happen pretty early on?
Well, that was when I was 18. That was my first trip to a casino, pretty much.
And you chose Arizona of all places.
Well, Rob, I mean, Gila River Casino.
Mm-hmm. Oh, because it was 18 plus, that's right.
Yeah, it was 18 plus then. And Rob, you know, thought that would be a good one to go. There was good games going. So, you know, after I went to the casino, Rob said, okay, here, Mike, here's $1,000. He divided it in 7 envelopes, and he wrote a certain amount, like $100-something a day.
Mm-hmm. And that was your bankroll.
And he says, that was my bankroll I could use. And then he left in the room. Okay, here's Mondays, and he put it away. And when he came back into the room, all the 7 M's opened up the first day. So, you know, bad bankroll management.
Right off the.
But
right
I back. Think I got even for the trip. I still and the,
you want it back.
Yeah, I think I had a bar from him, but I want it back.
So that there's the sign of. You know, of your ability to claw your way back right there.
Yeah, but you have to play in your comfort zone. You know, I think I went out of my comfort zone. I was like, let's go for the highest limits possible. Let's gamble it up.
Now, you did go to community college, so you did have a plan there.
I did go to Broward Community College. And,
BCC?
BCC, but I had to take 4 or 5 Red Bulls every morning just to get up, and late night poker, so it didn't work out well for me.
I only took one class there.
I withdraw from class. Yeah, I failed too.
But
I had to withdraw.
You always did good in school.
Yeah, I was always had.
Well,
from
here's the problem though with poker players. They all did good in school until they found poker.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, well, 9th to 11th grade, I was in Hollywood Hills High School in Hollywood, Florida. But I wouldn't say I always had great grades from first grade to 8th grade. I had straight A's. I had amazing grades. From 9th to 11th, it was like, you know, C's, some B's.
Well, that's because you had a functioning casino in your house.
Because we had a casino in our house, and I was listening to Howard Stern radio. And when I got a car, we were like, you know, we skipped the first few classes to listen to Howard Stern.
Yeah.
And so, When I was in 11th grade, so they're like, you know, they kicked me out of school because I was out of the district. I was living in Houndale, and I was missing too much school, you know, playing the hooky, going to the casino, doing whatever I got to do to make money. And then they moved me to Houndale High School, and I had to get, like straight A's and B's to graduate. And I proved, you know, I did it. It was easy.
So when you – so people might not know this. You gave yourself the nickname The Grinder because it was your online screen name.
Yes, well, so maybe.
But were you being ironic, or was there a time when you thought of yourself as like a grinder?
Well, I'm still a grinder, but actually, my first name was Michael 34.
Michael 34.
Yeah,
because you were 34 years old. That was your way of convincing people you weren't underage.
No, just a random number, Michael 34, and I think maybe it was from because the roulette number. I liked 34 as well.
Oh, there you go.
But you know, even though 17 is my favorite number, the roulette wheel. But when I was, you know, I said, what would be a name that would suit me well? And I said, the Raker, this, that. And then I said, oh, the Grinder. Oh, mm-hmm. The Grinder. So I nicknamed myself that, and that name stuck to me.
Remember those old hats you used to have? The Grinder is a machine.
I'm a machine.
Yeah.
Yeah,
this
is more like the pusher.
No. The pusher.
No. Never fold. #NeverFold.
I think you get to keep your nickname for life, regardless of how nitty you become or not. So.
Yeah, well.
You've earned it.
Yeah, you're just going to be the grinder forever, even if you stop grinding.
I'm going to do #NeverFold.
There you go. Let's talk about, are you still scared of flying? Was that the reason you bought this crazy RV? That's the story, right?
I don't know who's gave you that story. I mean,
you just like driving across the
country?
I
don't mind. I fly everywhere, but I like
to. Well, you have to, yeah.
Yeah, I fly all the time. No, I like to always want an RV. That was my dream.
This was like, what, 06, 07?
Oh, well, actually, when I won the commerce, you know, when you're that age,
LAPC.
I think it was 06, 12 years ago. So I was, 25 years old,
yeah.
24. And you don't really make smart decisions at that age. you're still a kid, especially, you know, guys or, you know, girls mature way faster than men. And we're like, oh, what are you going to do? It's only $178,000. I just won 1.8. Oh, let's just blow 178 on an RV. Where it's going to depreciate
10% of your winnings. Right there.
10% of your winnings, and you know it's going to depreciate right when you drive that thing right out of the lot. So I drove it out of the lot. I said, "Hey, here's cash." Bought it cash. I went to the Commerce Casino.
What did the guy think?
It was a 40-foot bus.
Well, like when you paid cash for this thing.
No, at first I thought, how could somebody just drive this? What kind of license do you need for this? Driver's like, oh no, you're good. It was a 40-foot bus, and I was like, I couldn't even see out the back. There was a camera to see out the back, so I didn't know how to drive this thing.
That'd be terrifying.
So right when I got to the Commerce Casino, I pulled this in, and everyone's like, what the heck? And all you hear is, and it was a stop sign, and it scratched my whole bus the first day.
Oh, the first day.
The first day I had it, yeah, I scratched the whole bus. It was just a nightmare. Wait, so I never took it out of California.
What?
Yeah, I never took it out of California. I went from San Diego, I was up to San Jose, that was it. And then I had a driver send it to Vegas. End up living there for a little bit, mm-hmm. And I would say, you know what, this ain't for me. And I ended up buying a house, got rid of the RV, and I think I sold it for like $138,000. So I lost about $40,000 on it after 6 months.
That's just
never again. Like, but I would love to have an RV, but a lot cheaper one, or yeah. Smaller. You know, nothing crazy.
Well, what
crazy.
Was so special about this one that it? You know?
I mean, it was brand new. It was in a 40 footer. It's like it was a top of the line RV, but. Yeah, it wasn't for me, and I didn't want to like do all the cleaning, the bathroom stuff. It wasn't for me.
Yeah, that sounds like a big hassle.
Yeah,
makes sense why you got rid of it. You haven't been shy about going broke. You know, you had that struggle after. Actually, let's talk about 2010 and where you were at that point in your career.
Well, 2010, I wasn't really doing it. I mean, it might have sounded because somebody just put an article out.
Well, in the Pokerography, they talk about there was a. Real estate problems.
Yeah, I just bought in 2000. Actually, it was 2007, 2008 when I purchased a lot of homes in Florida, and I purchased terrible timing. I bought everything at its high point, and boom, the market crashed, and I put about $1 million in real estate, and it was a lot of cash in that time, especially
Yeah,
I was trying to do the right thing and make make more money with my money I had. So I was trying to flip the money, and then everything went to a crash course. So. Fell behind, and then and the poker was a little slow for me. Having you think you're gonna win every event because you just keep winning, but there's those times where you have those droughts where
but
you
do
can't
you feel
win
like
anything.
You play better when your back's against the wall.
I think I play. I think I played. I always my game has always been sharp. I've been. If I feel like you know, you have to keep up with the new guys now, but the new generation, but I feel like I have it, and I have my own ways where no one can really figure out my style. They think they can, but I make the biggest adjustments in the game where no one can ever figure me out. If I can't figure me out, no one can figure me out.
You obviously we talk about real estate and how that, you know, the timing didn't work out. Was there anything you invested in that worked out during that time?
Well, actually, I had a bunch of gold stores.
Okay.
You know, I was one of the partners in gold, you know, the cash for gold and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So we had some stores in Tennessee, and then we had some in St. Louis. So I had 7 stores. That went, you know, fairly well. And when the economy was doing bad and the gold prices were high, it was a great business to be in.
Yeah, exactly.
And I remember the cash for gold when people were just they're mailing their gold in. That was the craziest thing I've ever seen. But, you know, we kind of have the same idea, but we had stores and people bringing their gold or paying, you know, they're giving up their gold for 50% when, you know, you give it to the refinery, you get back 99%. So you're making 49% profit on people's, you know, gold. So it was a great business. And it lasted maybe a year, year and a half, 2 years, two years, but that worked out well. We had some, you know, some businesses that didn't go so well. Rob's idea to go into this tinting business, Tint World business.
Okay.
Right? But, it, you know, that wasn't a good idea.
Yeah, put a little bit on so Rob.
You had some good stuff and some bad stuff, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know.
But you're a guy who likes
always
to
been great.
Dip your toe in a lot of different
areas.
I
like to take risks for sure. We had a dealing school. I mean, I had a few times where I took risks, you know. You know, if I feel like a big reward's, you know, if you can take the risk and you can gain a huge reward, it's worth it. It's well worth it. And I gamble. I take shots, you know.
You first won the 50K event in 2010, won it again in 2012. Then you go ahead and go finish fourth last year?
I finished 2016. I finished fourth. 17, bubbled. And in 2018, I made up for the bubble and victorious.
Then you win it again.
I prevailed.
We joke, it's the Chip Reese Memorial Trophy. We joke that we should maybe put your name on there as part of the trophy. Winning it 3 times in such a short history of the events. I mean, what is it about this particular event that suits your game?
Well, I don't want to give any tips away because I'm trying to look for a fourth victory. But, but I think I'm just very well-rounded. I have all the games, you know. I wouldn't say to perfection, but I'm almost there. I feel like I have you have a lot of great players in that event. You know, very experienced, but I don't think they're to perfection. A lot of the games, they're not perfect. And then they have my tournament style as well. That works really well for me.
Right, because they may be playing the biggest mixed games on earth.
Yeah, and I play all about a big cash games as well. Same thing, but yeah. I just know how to make those adjustments in tournaments where they don't know how to do it. And then you have the big bet games where they're mixed game players and they don't have as much experience in the PLO or the no limit games, so that's where I have my edge. And then you have those big bet players that don't have as much experience in the limit games, so that, you know, that's what gives me that. So you don't have the all around fit player in those games, but, you know, so far I think one of the toughest guys I actually played against was Brian Rest, that has 2 victories.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's another one whose game seems suited for it.
Yeah, he's very suited, and he's very well rounded, and he's really good in all the games. He was really tough.
So that's who does well in this 50.
Yeah, you know, I actually thought, you know, was impressed by Justin Bonomo too.
Yeah,
you know, he's really good. He got way better. I
mean, he's stepped up his mixed game a lot the last few
years. Stepped up his mixed game, you know. But there's a few tough players, you know.
And what do you think about the approach of some of the high roller community now, where everyone's, you know, GTO and they're trying to play perfect poker? Whereas you're a guy, you're not going to ignore math.
Yeah.
You know, but you're going to size a guy up and say, nah, he doesn't got it, or he's not going to call.
I'm going to shove it in his face. That's it.
Yeah. How do you, you know, when you're playing the I'm going to shove in his face style?
Well, sometimes I look for some tells and stuff like that. I was kind of searching for tells, you know, last few days, you know, and even the World Series. But like,
do you get them in the 50K?
You're playing maybe in the big, like the limit ones. You don't really see many tells because it's more of a faster paced game. But like, it slows down a lot when you play the no limit in the PLO. But, you know, those guys are, you know, those pros. You don't give much away, but, you know, we should find a little something maybe. But not really. It's really tough. You know, it's not as easy as it used to be.
Is it? But what is it that you think you're doing differently than the rest of the field? What sets you apart? Is it just relentless aggression?
When I have a hand, and the thing is, with me, that if you see when you watch that, you see people like, I'm always getting paid off no matter what. So if I minimize my bluffs as much as I can and maximize the value when I do have a hand,
right,
I'm going to get paid off every time.
And you go for home run value a lot.
That's why I'm always, you see me in every tournament, I'm almost every time. If I'm past day one, I'm usually the chip leader.
Exactly. Because you're putting people in and you're saying, I'm either going to get full value on this or I have absolutely nothing.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter. I might as well just overbet every pot. I get paid off when I have a hand.
That's like me when I play online. Just hit the pot button over and over.
Yeah, just pot,
again.
Yeah. Two times pot.
Let's talk about 2010 and that epic year of, like, you know, where the summer, everything just lines up. You know, you make the main event final table. What did you do leading up to the final table? You were one of the November Niners.
Well, leading up to the final, but I mean, it was just like, after when the Players' Championship, you have your confidence that everything's good, you know, you're feeling
much
better.
You made two other final tables that year as well.
Oh, yeah, that was too many years ago. I forgot.
That's you were on 70 a roll.
Years ago, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't just
maybe the limit hold'em. I don't know.
Yeah, 10K limit hold'em, and there was another 10K you did well in as well.
Yeah, it was a great year. I remember I finished second player of the year to Frank Casella. And
yeah, he won two bracelets.
But it's not a big deal. I could have beat him. I just had to win the main event. No big deal. to tie. And I was almost there, you know.
Yeah, you're not bitter about that at all.
Yeah, so I, you know, I.
Oh, we love Frank.
Yeah, love Frank.
Yeah, Frank's been on the podcast. Yeah,
so Frank's a great guy. But, you know, it feels like one of the years, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm good in these even years and, you know, the odd ones, I'm not sure. That's why it's very odd that I don't, you know, do well in, you know, 17, 15, 13, 11. But, you know, I play my best in the even years.
I got a buddy like that who's like an even year player.
Yeah. So I don't know what it is.
The even years pay for the odd years.
Yeah. But this year, I really haven't played as much as I wanted to. I was coming here and didn't think I was going to play any events, just cash. And then I was like, you know, I think I played the 500 PLO. I cashed it and I said, all right, let's play the 50K.
You went deep in one of the PLOs, didn't you?
I just came fifth a few days ago, yes.
That's right. You finished fifth. Wow, that's a massive field.
Yeah, I was in Muscles. John, I was actually walking out. I actually played the seven-card stud high-low. I played six hands, didn't win a pot in 10K. The first tournament I haven't won a pot in, pretty much. Then I made enough time to get into the 888, exactly the time to buy in the 888. I busted 8-8. Then I had exactly a few minutes left to get into the Giant. So I played three tournaments at once. And I didn't even know about the Giant. I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah.
I was walking out. My friend's like, hey, let's have some drinks. Let's go play this $300 one. I was like, what is it?
$365 PLO.
I said, let's play it. So I just, you know, let me have a few drinks. Before you know, I have $1.8 million. Start with $25,000. I have all the chips. And then I ended really bad in the final table. I got in good. I probably should have won the bracelet. I lost the biggest pot. The guy had aces. The guy had kings. Hit a king on the river.
Yeah, you make it that far, you might as well go for it, yeah.
Yeah, so, and then I was like, when I finished fifth, I was like, you know what? I want to take July 4th off. Let me just jump into the main event. You know, might as well. Just go for it all. Then I got the feature table. And, you know, it was great. You know, I just feel like, you know, I felt really good. I built up stack and with no cards. I played with no cards. And then day two, I think I wasn't sure if I was going to get the feature table or not. But believe it or not, I came back to the room. I actually, you know, because I wanted to fix a scar in my face, right? So I had some fillers and maybe some little bit of acne scars. So I didn't think I was going to get the feature table. And my face is bleeding. And then I get back to the Rio, and then they say, oh, you're back on the feature table. And I'm like, I still have these bumps on my face. I'm like, oh, my God, are you serious? I couldn't believe it.
Makeup.
Yeah, well, it was too late for that.
They didn't make you look pretty? They didn't?
I don't know. I don't mind. I'm a guy. I don't mind. Yeah.
You put the hat down low.
I tried, but they had to put it backwards because I had to.
Oh, because of the logo. Yeah.
I had the logo. Yeah. I was wearing the Blum hat, but, you know. All good.
Oh, the Bloom.
Bloom, yeah.
Yeah, the Bloom dispensaries. There's a few of them in town.
We have three of them in town. Yeah. We have three of them in town, and I think four in California, I believe.
Well, you mentioned, you know, four bracelets, WPT title, 2006 card player of the year. Do the accolades matter to you? Do you care about the trophies and the glory and the...
Yeah, of course you care about the trophies and the glory, of course. But, you know, most important, if you could, you know, that you always have, but the most important about it is holding your money.
Yeah.
And do something smart with the money, because that's you're going to always have. But, of course, you know, you want to win titles, you want to win everything, you know, you want to be on top of the world. Who doesn't? And I feel like, you know, I feel like I've done enough where I'm well respected. I was like, you know, you win the Players Championship, okay, you could win it. It's very hard to win it if you don't know it. But two times is amazing, but three times is like unheard of.
He's not a fluke at three. But,
Fluke your way. And a fourth place. So, you know, I feel like I've done everything. I don't have to prove much, you know. And I think it's a time off I've taken that, you know, you can't burn yourself out, go travel here, travel the world. And I don't do it as much anyway because I have, you know, family values. I like to be around my kids. Mm-hmm. I was training a lot for a year. I was doing swimming. I was doing jiu-jitsu. I was doing kickboxing, boxing. No sparring yet, but I was just hitting bags and stuff like that just to stay in shape for poker and just feeling good. And I actually had to do something for – I had a no gambling bet for 1 year. So,
really?
So nothing. Only poker. So
a complete lifestyle.
Did a lifestyle
change. Hold on. You didn't place any bet.
Not one bet for 1 year.
Not like a $5 bet on the Super Bowl.
Nothing.
You didn't fill out one March Madness bracket.
I might have been under the 12 months. I don't know. It was very close.
Yeah.
But I didn't place a bet. I was training for 3 hours a day sometimes. It was crazy. I did a little too much. I was doing a lot of swimming. I was ready to do my first swimming competition. Then I was part of a swim team. And then I pulled out because I got the flu. And after my trainers moved to Orlando, they got married, moved to Orlando, and then I stopped swimming. But I still have my swimming gear here, but I haven't swam in 6 months. No, I haven't swam. I was all good. I was in great shape.
Was this just like part of you like training for a weird prop bet that no one would think
you're good at? No, it wasn't a prop bet, but you know, I was willing to take action. I was doing a little bit of everything. You know, I don't know what. I was trying to be a super athlete.
But, you went vegan for a while?
Mm-hmm,
stop eating meat for a little bit.
Really. I won't go vegan. I'm a carnivore.
Yeah.
I got to eat anything besides pig.
I'm interested in this no gambling because, you know, you have a reputation for placing some bets.
I had a bet with Alan Richardson, yeah.
Yeah. So you had a bet you wouldn't bet.
Yeah, I would bet and wouldn't bet, but
but what about these days? Are you
I don't even know if I collected, Alan.
Do you stay out of the pits or out of the sports book these days?
Once in a blue moon, but I'm only in the pits here and there trying to get free rooms, which it worked out well because I'm ahead a little bit.
Yeah.
So it works out well, but I haven't put that much time in here at all. Maybe on the Caesar's Palace, I probably put an hour in this whole month in gambling.
That's right. We're at Caesar's Palace for those who are listening.
You know, once in a while for fun, I'll just, you know, do other things, you know. But, you know, when you get burnt out from poker, let's have fun, play slots. But I just kind of try to stay away from all that.
What about prop bets? Because we have a question on this podcast, like the craziest prop bets you've ever been a part of. I'm sure you've had some doozies over the year.
I mean, the toughest challenge was this prop bet for no gambling for a year.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
So there's really nothing. I mean, nothing could be any harder than that. I mean, I couldn't think. But I never had a big prop bet. But if I did have one, I think I'd prevail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're just that dedicated?
Yeah, of course. If it's big enough, of course.
Let's talk celebrations, parties. Because I heard that you spent $17,000 on a party once.
I spent in 2012. I went to Tryst at the Wynn, and then and then I was like, yeah, let me – they saw me with like 30, 40 people, and the first thing they go, Mike, don't worry, tonight you have no minimum. Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah.
And before you know it, the bill racked up to $17,000, and I was like, that's a lot for a party, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want to spend – I'd rather spend $17,000 buy a car or whatever, give it to my children, give it to people in need for charity. But, you know, it ended up being $17,000. Thank God I have – at least one person put up four, so it ended up costing me 13.
That's not too bad.
Nah, it's not bad.
Somebody stepped up a little bit.
Yeah, somebody stepped up. But
so your party days are behind you then, or?
Once I go out once a week.
She's laughing over there.
Once a week I go out, but, you know, I'd like to get out. But actually when I do really well when I go out, then play poker the next day. When I go to sleep on time, I do everything, wake up early, do the gym. This I actually don't do well.
Really?
It's kind of crazy.
Overprepared.
The grinder needs zero sleep.
I need zero sleep.
How do you play hungover? Is that the best? Is that the best? I'm not,
who said I'm hungover?
Yeah.
As long as if it's vodka, I'm fine. If I start mixing, it's not going to work out too well for me.
It's not going to work out.
Yeah, but I don't really get hangovers. Not too much. Not too bad. But I try to stay away from all that drinking stuff. I try to, like, you know, that would be the hardest challenge, you know, not to have a drink for a year. I probably wouldn't bet on that because I enjoy it here and there. Just, you know, why not? You know, I need a drink here and there, but nothing. I'm not saying alcoholic, but I like to have, you know, I like to drink.
Yeah. If you're going to go,
might as well go. I go the whole way.
you know, obviously done well in the 50K mixed game event. So what about playing the big high stakes mixed games? Like, is that something you aspire to or you want to get back in there? Or?
I don't really. I mean, I was playing some 4800 here and there. Mm-hmm. I played 612. I played 500,000 super stud high low. with a 10K cap. We were playing a pot limit on 7th Street.
Wow.
And so that was only the most you could lose in hand was 10K. But, you know, I didn't know really. I wasn't in none of those big high. You know, if a game is good, I'll play it. But, you know, I'm not. There's, I have no ego. I play anything.
You came out here for cash. Is that really what you're focusing on these days?
I was focused more. I was playing a lot of five-card PLO in Florida. Mm-hmm. I was playing highly at casino. I played at Magic City. I played Hard Rock. Yeah, I mix it up sometimes. Once at a Blue Moon, I live right next to Gulfstream Park and Hallandale, Florida. Okay. But I mix it up. I play a lot of PLO. My preference would be like 7-card stud game, super stud, high low. I like those mixed games. Badoogie, 2-7, yeah. Triple draw. So over and the last game I like playing is No Limit, unless it's a really good game.
Really?
Yeah, I don't play No Limit.
The game you think,
but that's not. It's probably not even my best game.
You know, I'm wondering what you feel. Let's see, how old are you now?
37.
So you got 3 more years until you are officially eligible for the big Hall
of Fame.
Yeah. What do you think? You'll be a first ballot Hall of Famer?
I think I'll make it, yeah.
Well, I know you'll make it.
I'll make it at some point, but I think I will be.
The problem is I think we're going to have a log jam pretty soon because I think everyone's about to turn 40. Yeah. And it feels like there's been a lot of people over the last 15 to 20 years who are, you know, who should get in eventually. So I'm wondering who you're going to kick out.
Yeah, well, I don't know who's close in age, but, you know, I don't know who's close in age with me, but I'm hitting 40 in 3 years. And Ivy's already past 40, right? He's in the Hall of Fame,
right? He's in. He was a first ballot.
Was he? Okay. But I think at 40 I'll hit it, yeah.
Is that something that's important to you?
Of course. I mean, for all, everything I've done, I mean, I worked hard for it, and you know, it's well deserved. I've done a lot, you know, this poker community. I've been around forever, and win 3 player championships. Probably gonna be the 4th one by the time I hit the 40, hopefully, and then it'll be quite an accomplishment. But you know, I'm gonna try to. I want to win one of these little small no limits, like 1500 at the World Series. That would be quite an accomplishment.
like a millionaire maker.
But I didn't play any of those. I didn't even play the Colossus. None of those events. Mm-hmm. I missed a lot of events this year. I only played. Probably this is the least I've ever played. I think it was about around 15 events.
Yeah.
Out of the I usually play around 35 to 40, and I just took a lot of time off.
Well, 15 events, you final table 2 of them with a win. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty. I mean, of course, if you won 1 for 40, you win the 50K. It's good.
Yeah, exactly. So and you still have one.
And I still have the main event going, and a few other events after the main. So we'll see.
All right, we have some rapid fire questions for you if you're ready.
Fire away.
Biggest pot you've ever won or lost, your choice.
The biggest pot ever won or lost. I think it was in a cash game. I think it was Danny Alaya. I think it was a no limit hand. I don't remember the hand. I think he got really lucky. I mean, I turned the nuts and he rivered. He had a set and I turned the nuts straight or something like that. We got all in the river pair of the board.
Do you remember how big it was or what game it was?
I think it was no limit. I think it was about $100,000 pot, 170, 160, something like
that.
That
hurts.
Yeah.
So what did you do after that beat? What did you get up? You shake it off?
No big deal. Yeah.
Play the next
Danny's
hand?
My friend. Yeah. Yeah. You shake it off. I remember I lost a big pot too. I had aces versus ace king all in preflop. Ooh. And we ran it twice and I got quartered.
Oh.
He made a straight the first one. The next one, I flopped, comes ace, 2, 3, came 4, 5. We made a wheel and we chopped up second board.
Oh, man. Uh-huh. That's
dirty. One of the biggest pots I lost too. I think that was like 100K.
Oh, man. That's such a safe feeling.
50 each, yeah.
Best swap or piece you've ever had of anybody?
They all had to swap with me. I'm like, I have the worst luck in the world in swapping.
I don't want to swap with anybody. Immediately laugh like you're just like
the guy who made me the most money. I'll never forget Josh Aria. We swapped in Costa Rica, I believe, for Bodog. Year that's like 15 years. God knows how long ago. That's the last time I really made money with anybody. But I have a few people running in the main event now. I took some pieces. I think one's out, but I'm sure they're all go out because I suck at it.
Ask you a lot for swaps, you know.
Swaps, people buy me in this. yeah, it's crazy. It doesn't stop, especially when you win an event. Everyone wants a loan.
That's what you talked about. Like you want LAPC.
Yeah.
You don't even leave the state. You've already bought an RV with 10% and started 16 businesses.
Yeah.
Everyone's got their hand out. I'm sure even today, I mean, you can't walk down the Rio without getting somebody asking for something.
Sometimes you just say no.
Yeah? Are you getting better about saying no these days?
It's hard, but you know, you look out for ones that looked out for you in the past or your friends or whatever, people closest to you. But, you know, you have to learn how to say no. You can't just help everyone out, you know.
Exactly. Favorite tournament destination?
I love Barcelona. Okay. A lot of things to do, but there's no place like home. I love Miami, yeah. I love playing there, and I think they're the best tournaments in Florida.
The thing about Florida that's gotten good over the last few years is there's a lot of casinos within a short drive of each other. You could sleep in your own bed and still make a lot of different spots.
Yeah.
You don't have to travel as much.
Yeah, of course.
Don't have to get in that RV.
You
get all
time rituals. Everything's in Florida. Actually, the Hard Rock has great tournaments. If you want to be, you know, I mean, there's a lot of still inexperienced players that play there.
Question here about mixed games. If, you know, there's a lot of no limit players out there who've never even looked at mixed games. How did you dip your toe in, and what do you recommend for, like, beginning players?
Well, I've always been a mixed game player. I've been playing forever. So, I don't know if not many people knew that, but I was always into mixed games, and, you know, I don't play as much No Limit, but I play a lot more PLO, for sure. But if you want to get your feet well, come into Bellagio or the Aria. We're all here. You can learn. I'll teach you a few tricks.
He's like, I'm not going to help them at all. I just want their money. Oh, okay. That's
savage.
She's over there. I'm wondering, when you got your headphones on at the table, what are you listening to?
What headphones? Who listens to headphones? I listen to the way they breathe. I wear someone to everything. Very rare I wear headphones. Unless I'm watching, like, maybe a UFC fight.
Okay.
I love watching UFC fights. I follow a lot of that. And that's the only time I'd probably put my headphones on. I don't really listen to music. Unless it's, like, a small event, like a, you know, nothing. Like a World Series main event, I'm not listening to headphones.
Yeah.
I'm listening. I want to hear a table talk. I want to hear everything. I want to get in the game.
You're completely plugged in.
You're plugged in into a 50K buy-in. No, I'm not listening to headphones. And I don't understand how people listen. I'm watching the feature table now, and people have their headphones on. I thought you're not even allowed to have it on. I was watching today. It's like, how do these guys have their headphones on? I was like, what, are they crazy? You're playing to win $8.8 million the title. You're playing for everything.
What is it that they're missing that you're picking up on?
Well, you're picking up what people, they might say something you missed out on. Mm-hmm. You might, you know, or the way they're breathing, what this, you know, just their table presence. You don't know anything. If you're just, it just seems like when you have your headphones on, you're only focused on yourself. You're not focused on the other players.
They were like, this is my first main event, that's information that you could use.
Yeah, just anything. Just anything. Just the table talk. You don't want to miss the table talk. You want me, you know. You know, oh my God, yeah, if they say, oh, this is my first event, this, you can take advantage of those situations. Now you have your headphones on, and sometimes you miss action. You're like, sometimes you can make a mistake. The guy raises, and you didn't see him raise or something like that. And you put in your chips, and by accident, you...
We've seen Ivy do that on TV.
So let's see what happens. That's what happens. So I think you're at a big disadvantage when you're wearing headphones, always.
You said something.
I know it keeps your patient and stuff like that, but, like, I would use it maybe in a smaller 500, 1500, maybe I'll do it.
Or if you get the worst table draw ever.
Or the worst table, yeah. Just certain times, but rarely I'd wear it. But unless I'm watching, you know, maybe a show or something, which I really do. Or, you know, I'm watching a fight. Or maybe a football game.
Well, you said something intriguing the other day when they were discussing that. And you said, I'm playing the players, not the cards.
Yeah, I always play the players. Yeah. It's not what I have, it's what you have.
Man, who cares what you got? He's not even going to get tabled.
You see my, yeah.
He's not playing play 9-10.
I don't think it's 9-10. I'm looking at his aces. Or make you think it's what I have. All What's right, the difference?
So, what
so I have?
You're not playing poker. You're in your car. You're all by yourself. All right. Sarah's not even there. So you can listen to whatever you want. What are you listening to?
I really put on music anyways, but I listen to hip hop. I like house music, a little bit of everything. Yeah, but I, you know.
Well, what do you go to when you open Spotify or Pandora? What are you doing?
I'm actually playing poker online.
That's the truth. You just never away. Listen to music.
No, I listen to music, but I listen to hip hop. Like you know, I listen to Power 96.
Wow, Power 96.
Y100.
Now you're throwing some nostalgia my way. Y100. I remember going to Footy's Wing Ding back when I was a kid.
Y100.
94.9 Zeta, is that still around?
Yeah, I think they're still around, but I don't listen to that.
that's not your speed?
Nah.
That was more me in high school.
But also, I have, you know, good friends and family around me. You know, I have my girlfriend, I have, you know, her sister, and I got my brothers. I got, you know, great friends, you know. They're, you know, always there for me. You know, my children. And then I have, you know, a lot of friends that looked out, you know, always there by my side. You have Alan Richardson was always there. Lewis Calvo, and a lot of great poker players. And, you know, when I'm down in Miami, and then my girlfriend Sarah's, you know, always been there for me from the good and bad, you know, I had some rough patches, but I was always, I was mentally there. I was always fine, you know, then, but this past few months, I lost one of my closest friends in January. So I was kind of rough. And then he was taking some pills, he was doing Kava, I think the Kava.
Oh.
Like an herbal drink. It was like an herbal drink, nothing. It was like, he did something else with it or something, and he had a bad reaction to it.
Yeah,
with taking pills or something, so he passed away in January.
Wow. That's scary shit.
And he had two children. He lived right next to me. We went on a poker cruise in December together. So his name's Alex Gorelick. His, you know, one of his, you know, children, Nathan, was autistic, and his other son, Nadav, and their mom had stage 4 cancer. She just passed away like last week. So they lost both their parents in the last 4 months. So he was always there. It was like, I had a GoFundMe. You know, we raised a lot of money for the family. But we did a lot of stuff together. He was, you know, every day I heard, he would call me five times. He calls me more than Sarah. And then you don't get that phone call more. You start missing him. So I was like thinking about him today. It was like, you know, when I get back home, I got to, you know, help the children out, do the best I can. You know, it's going to be rough, you know,
when
I get
back home. Oof.
And then I had my buddy's friend here, like in this room last week, he passed away. He was after the 50K. He went to celebrate with me and he passed away last week.
That's crazy.
So I had a few friends then another friend passed away too. He got shot. So it's been a rough 4 months, yeah.
Wow, bittersweet then, Summer.
Yeah, it's been crazy. So, but you know, if you keep your head up.
Makes you appreciate
life even
more. Yeah, and also, you know, puts poker into perspective.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So so I'm like, you know, you had your highs and your lows. So it's like, you know, I won the Players Championship, it's great, but then you lost this. You know, you think you have this all in your mind still, like, you know. Kind of offsets a little bit, but you know, you try to keep your head up high.
We got two more questions left. You mentioned that you said you what was your that you worked at? You were a busser at Bennigan's.
At Bennigan's when I started when I was 15, 16.
Any other horror jobs growing up?
I did a deal. I was at the Seminole Indian for a few months, but when they fired me, I had more excuses. Like I was on my termination list on my sheet, there was not enough room on the termination what I did, because one day I remember they called me up and you're in Florida, right? You're in South Florida, it's hot and sunny, and they're like, Mike, where are you at? You have to be at work. I was like, no, I'm in a snowstorm. How are you in a snowstorm if you're in Florida? No, I'm in New York, actually. I'm stuck in a plane. So I was on a plane, the flight was delayed, and I got fired right away. That didn't last too long, and after that,
were you a good dealer?
When you
showed
up. I'm actually a righty, but I deal lefty. It's kind of, it's
cool. Oh, yeah, that?
Yeah, I pitch with the left.
That's kind of weird.
I can't pitch with my right. I don't know what's weird.
Yeah. Are you extra critical of all the dealers you come across then?
Yeah, sometimes, because I had a dealer school as well, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but, you know, it sucks. You know, you have these dealers too. Sometimes they're experienced dealers at, you know, the World Series, but what are you going to do, you know? You need those extra dealers, but you know, if they put a little bit more time, they should put some time in after the World Series at least, so they're ready to prepare for next year or go to another school. Start learning mixed games as well.
The problem, what I've heard from people at the series is that they get kind of trained at the series. Yeah. And then they go and they get better jobs elsewhere the next summer.
Yeah, so it takes so time for anything, but
you can't escape it.
Yeah, I know there might be a shortage on dealers, but, you know, it'll be nice to have ones that, you know, you have one dealer can deal 20 hands an hour, one deals 40 hands an hour. I mean, it makes a big difference. So that, like, when you get the table draw, it's not even the players, it's the dealer. You're hoping to have a good dealer at the table.
All right, we end the podcast the same way every time, with a question from the random question generator. And yours is, if you were arrested with no explanation, what would your friends and family assume that you had done?
Whew.
First, try to guess what she would think, and then we'll ask her.
This is so tough for Michael because he's like the least.
I've never gotten into trouble. Maybe
so. Maybe it was a misunderstanding. Maybe he was trying to break. Maybe he was breaking up a bar fight.
Maybe I was
jaywalking, helping an old woman across the road.
Exactly.
Maybe. Or maybe I was just so drunk that I didn't realize I passed out the table. I grabbed one of the chips from the dealer's rack and then just, you know, wouldn't give it back and say, that's my chip.
Yeah, just drunk and belligerent at the poker table.
Maybe that's or
not
grab some chips.
But drunk and passed out.
Well, have to be belligerent and passed out or
don't
something.
Pass out anywhere. Ask Lily.
But I was never belligerent. I would just pass out. I fall asleep.
I don't
asleep.
Think you'd be arrested for sleeping, but maybe.
I could pass out on the Bellagio floor, but I don't think you'd get in trouble for that.
I mean, there was a guy who walked in the Bellagio naked last December, and
I mean, I was one time I was half naked. I had my ass out, I think.
You have your ass out in the poker room, yeah.
Yeah, no big deal.
Yeah, you get away with it.
Don't most of those guys
have to... Oh, yeah, anytime, this is like poker player butt crack is a serious problem.
But I think if somebody, like, if I see my friend...
Anytime they're getting massaged.
I think if I see somebody in trouble that needs help, I'll jump in and help him out. Somebody, like...
He's at least confrontational person.
Maybe a brother got you in trouble. Maybe you're defending one of your brother's honors.
Yeah.
Man.
So crazy.
All right, well, we won't see you in jail ever anytime soon.
They're not the nice guys.
Hopefully not.
Michael, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks, Julio. Thanks so much for having me.
That's the show. Thanks again to Mike for doing the podcast. You can look out for him on an upcoming cover of Card Player Magazine or check out what he's up to on Twitter at TheGrinder44. Thanks to you, the listener, for checking out the podcast. You can find past episodes on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you do us a favor and leave us a rating and a review, let us know about it with an email to pokerstories@cardplayer.com, and we'll hook you up with a free digital subscription to Card Player Magazine. Until next time, thanks for listening.